Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Wednesday, 8th of June. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Metete Tulari, talking as a Signia result. We've also got Dr. Chris Harmser talking local GDP. The economy is finally back at pre-pandemic levels. And then Regin Corsi, role of banks and underpin of a healthy economy. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb: Signia shares hit 52-week high on robust results. They also paid a chunky dividend, 80 cents a share. That's an interim dividend. Business day bigger than expected growth takes GDP back to pre-pandemic. Manufacturing sector trade the biggest contributors. Mining, oddly, was the red sector there. Morning markets, US was green overnight. S&P up 1%, Nasdaq a little bit behind, up 0.9%. Asia is green, Sydney up 0.5%, Tokyo up 1% as well. Commodities mixed, gold 1,850, Brent 121 on the nose. The two red ones, platinum, $1,010, palladium, $2,001 an ounce. Rand, 15.42, top 40, looking for a green open about 400 points. That's almost 0.2%. That as Tencent trades up 4.7% in Hong Kong. General Hong Kong enthusiasm today as China lifts the lockdown.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Metete Tulari, head FX execution at RMB. Metete, the Signia results site yesterday, a good set of numbers from them and kicking on all cylinders. I mean, all parts of the business. Obviously, they've got the administration, they've got the passive, they've even got some trading, which is making the money and paying a giant dividend.
Good morning, Simon. And I suppose despite the challenging economic environment that we're all facing, I mean, Signia has really achieved phenomenal record half-year financial results up until the 6 months that ended 31 March. You know, we saw the after-tax profit jump up 31% to about 139 million. Now, as you rightfully say, I mean, they're attracting more retail investors, and that's thanks to their growing popularity of some of their ETFs. So part of those retail investors include myself because I've actually embraced some of their offerings. But nonetheless, I mean, you know, as you say, even more investors are embracing their passive investing because of the low cost. And I think that's the other reason why you've seen the assets under management and also administration rising by like 6% to about 295 billion. And also, I think also on the institutional front, I think they've also scored new business there where they highlighted the fact that they've attracted about 240 billion worth of institutional investors like new pension funds, etc. And then outside of the institutional investors, they're also now managing about 54 billion rand in assets under management for the retail investors, which is about an 18% increase from the 45 billion that the company had managed at the end of March last year. So as you rightfully say, I mean, the share price yesterday saw them hitting a 52-week high, closing up almost 4% at 19 rand a share. I mean, that had touched about 19 rand 50 during intraday trading. And also, you know, the other thing for them is obviously declaring an interim dividend of 80 cents a share. So that just shows you phenomenal record growth. And obviously, as you say, they're really firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, and the quick last point in that dividend, I know we've said a lot about it, but I mean, their final dividend last year was 80 cents. Now, I get it was a different, you know, a different place, different time, et cetera, and the like, but this really has come through at, for me, a surprisingly large dividend, which actually says that they're going to potentially be a solid dividend payer going forward.
No, definitely. I think if anything, if you're just looking at some of the numbers and how they're growing, the mere fact that you've got your retail investment growing 18%, you've got your assets under management growing 6%, you've got new business flow, it shows you that obviously the company, which is the second largest provider of ETFs in South Africa, and it is the largest provider of international ETFs on the JSE, it just shows you there is growing popularity amongst the ETFs in the institutional and retail client base. And obviously just shows you that the more they're doing, you know, that's why you're actually going to see this dividend. I mean, if you think about it, you know, last year the financial backdrop wasn't as great,
yeah.
But nonetheless, they still managed to deliver a dividend. So I think that also the nice thing is that the group intends to continue delivering profits to the shareholders. So a gross dividend of 80 cents being paid out now, you know, results in a net dividend of 64 cents for the shareholder after dividend tax. Look, it's phenomenal, especially in this kind of backdrop that we're in this environment.
Yep, and if they can do us a $1.10 for the full year, and there's a buts and maybes there, that puts them on a forward dividend yield of 10%. That is, that's monster. That's absolutely monster. We'll leave it there. Mateta Tulari, Head FX Execution, RMB. Appreciate the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Joining us, Dr. Chris Homsa, economist at CH Economics, talking local GDP, came in yesterday at 1.9% for the first quarter. Expected was 1.7. It does make our economy back at that pre-pandemic level, December 2019. Of course, that also means we haven't grown in 2.25 years. Chris, appreciate the early morning. What was your expectation? As I said, consensus was 1.7, slightly better. Did the 1.9% surprise you, delight you, or was it kind of what you had penciled?
I must say, it's kind of what I penciled in. When I look over the weekend to the expected people that are giving their expectations, analysts, economists, throughout the world, now, this is an international survey that the website Trading Economies are doing, and they, in fact, expect their economy to come in at 2.1%.
Okay.
So it seems, though, that South Africans thought less than what will happen with the South African economy than international expectations, and that's why we saw the rand starting to strengthen from last Friday very strongly on these expectations. But nevertheless, it is the 1.9%, and it is on pre-COVID pandemic levels. So there was some improvement in the economy, and we must welcome that.
Absolutely, and being back at pre-pandemic, I know it's, I say that it means we haven't grown for 2.25 years, but we've had a pandemic in those 2.25 years. I got to say, what stood out for me was manufacturing, and we think of manufacturing as being battered by a weak economy and Eskom and all the other things that make it a really, really tough space. But I suppose, particularly with mining, it's actually doing all right.
It's actually doing it right. And if you look at, you know, one could expect that. If you look at retail sales and manufacturing production, since about December, it started to pick up to pre-pandemic levels and even higher. And I think it's just a function of opening of the economy. You know, restaurants were working, shops were open, some of the COVID regulations were lifted. So it was just getting back things to normal, you know, from a very low base. One has to say that, of course, from a very low base.
Yeah.
So the manufacturing industry had an increase by 4.9%. You know, I think it came for a surprise. I thought it would come from agriculture and mining.
Mm.
This is a surprise for us. If one look at the data and one look at the trend. Coming from minus 1.8% in the third quarter last year, then 1.4 and 1.9, it's a welcome upward trend. The question still now is, you know, will this last?
Yeah, will it last? And is it enough? I want to get to that in a second. Quickly, mining was the only negative. Is that because, I mean, commodity prices are elevated, but they're down from where they were peaking sort of first half of last year. Is that what took off the mining, or is it infrastructure? And, you know, we've spoken to the coal guys who simply can't get their product to market.
Yes, I think that's the main reason. That, you know, that we have an infrastructure problem. So our potential to export, got hammered, and it is a structural problem in the economy, and the figures now suggest that. But one just also has to remember the Chinese economy.
Yeah.
Due to the COVID regulations that they brought in very strict. So the Chinese economy, as our biggest trading partner, also contributed that, you know, our exports to those countries also were limited. And I think that had an effect as well. So it was a commodity prices, infrastructure problem in South Africa, and a world economy that is starting to shrink. If you look at the U.S. economy already in the first quarter negative growth, we expect the European Union to come out today, rarely a positive growth, something like 0.2%.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the U.K., they are already in negative territory. So the Chinese economy, they reckon the growth is going to be halved this year. So you know, that's our trading partners. So that has an effect on our exports and production in the mining sector, and the same with agricultural. There's a crop that we have to export, but people battle to do that.
The World Bank as well coming out and saying that things are going to get markedly tougher. Looking forward for South Africa, I mean, 1.9%. If we did that for the year, it's nice. It's truthfully not enough. It's barely ahead of population growth, which means per capita we're kind of going sideways. Expectation that it will pick up during the course of the year, or is this sort of going to be perhaps the highlight?
You see, the problem we have that now in the second quarter was the floods down in KZN.
Yeah.
So we expect the second quarter to be negative. It seems so, and then it may start pick up in the third and the fourth quarter. But the problem that we have is the wall of stagflation,
mm-hmm.
that the very quick acceleration in inflation in the developed world and even in the emerging markets will of course lead to a sharp increase in interest rates, which will dampen economic activity and our trading partners as well. And then, of course, the consistent high oil price due to the war situation. So I think where the Minister of Finance predicted the economic growth of 2% this year, I foresee this is not going to realize. I think we will be somewhere between 1.4% and 1.6% due to all these negative factors that is around the world now. Only if you look at the inflation rate, it accelerated enormously in the rest of the world, and interest rates will go up, so there will be a dampening in the economy. But the question is, will the world economy, just like in 2009 when the oil price also hit $146, will the world economy go in a recession? So the U.S. only need one negative quarter, then they are in a recession. So that will definitely have a negative impact. So I think we will move sideways from here for the rest of the world, the rest of the year.
Sideways, which and you mentioned stagflation there, which is the scary thing, which is sort of low growth, high inflation, and of course unemployment going the wrong way. We're not there yet as a planet, but it's certainly a risk. Dr. Chris Harmser, economist at CH Economics, appreciate the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Reg and Corsi, Executive Director at First Source Money. Reg, appreciate the early morning time. A great piece that you wrote earlier in the week around banks and where they fit in within the economy. And you make the argument, compellingly in my mind, that banks are institutions. They're not firms. They're an important underpin to the health of the economy. I mean, in essence, they set, you know, the interest rates guided by the Reserve Bank. More importantly, they turn on or off the taps of credit flowing into an economy and perhaps need to be viewed differently than how we typically do.
Absolutely, absolutely, Brian. I mean, South Africans have always thought, in fact, many people around the world think that banks are ordinary firms and therefore, you know, they pass on savings, which you and me put in them, and then pass them over to someone who wants to borrow. That's not really the case, you know. And, of course, this idea of banks being, you know, holders of people's savings, it's an old one given by a theory in economics, which theory has been proven to be wrong. But banks are, indeed, the creators of the money that we use. So that, in fact, in South Africa, 95% of all the money that is in circulation is created by commercial banks, to the extent that if they do create 95%, obviously, and allocate this money, they can choose who to allocate to, and therefore turn on and off as they wish.
And it's that allocation. And I mean, we look at our capital adequacy ratios of our banks in South Africa, and we say, oh, they're so strong, they're overcapitalized. There's another way of looking at that, which is saying that they're not lending aggressively enough. The public good doctrine could apply, and we could say to them, you've got capacity for more lending, and you're not doing it.
They have a lot of capacity to lend. In fact, Brian, to be honest, even a single bank, if there was only one bank, call it whatever, you know, the Reg Brown Bank, one, all right, it can lend to the entire population of South Africa for as long as it has a branch network that connects to every single citizen in the economy, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have all these banks that are here, the big five, if you want. Their lending practices are completely atrocious.
Yeah.
As Stellenbosch University reveals, only one out of 20 SMMEs that go to banks get financed. One out of 20. So 19 of them get refused. Yet we hear time and time and again that SMMEs are the backbone of an economy. SMMEs are the firm that employ. How on earth would it be possible for SMMEs to thrive in a place where they're never given lending?
Our biggest problem is the mindset, and as you say, which goes back literally centuries to when banks were, well, they were deposit takers. That's what they did. That was their business. And we viewed them as firms. How do we shift it? I mean, you know, obviously the debate's important. I mean, is this a regulatory environment? We don't want them to be reckless, but we want them to be more cognizant of their role.
Absolutely, absolutely. We don't want them indeed to be reckless, but to understand that they underpin entire economy. Now, how do we go about shifting this pin? A regulatory reform. In my 2017 presentation to Parliament, I said to them that unless we shift this way towards allowing the banks to lend to as large a population as possible, of course, meaningfully.
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible to remove this poverty that we have. Capital accumulation is the primary way in which people are going to have to move out of poverty. And how are they going to accumulate capital when there are no banks to give them money? So I called for the Reserve Bank Act to change. I called for the Banks Act to change and show that banks behave differently. They should behave as institutions, not as firms who talk to the shareholder interests only. Their interests go beyond the shareholder. In fact, the shareholder interests are minimized because you must remember that banks are supported quite heavily by the state itself. You and me guarantee the bank's solvency and liquidity. To the extent that you and me guarantee their solvency, it means they cannot fall anyhow. They cannot, you know, it's not like chicken Nando's and so on that can close any day.
Mm-hmm.
Banks cannot, because you and me guarantee their solvency. To the extent that we do guarantee their solvency, we therefore deserve to be assisted in the manner we should. which unfortunately is not the case in South Africa. So we need, to me, an overhaul of the regulatory environment in this country. But also, I'll give you an example in Germany, all right?
Mm-hmm.
In Germany before, they could not lend against property because people do not have property, all right?
Yeah.
They understood that you and me may be poor enough not to have property. We could have one small house, a tin shack here, but we need money, all right? So the Germanic system, what they did was they created a lot of community banks, and there are today a lot of community banks in Germany, by the way, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So community bank will know who is within the community,
yeah,
all right? So if they know who is within the community, they're able to assist a person within that community, whether you have, collateral or not.
Yeah.
So collateral, therefore, was not the primary issue in Germany as they were developing, maybe now. So the issue of collateral must be revisited to saying, if you have a lot of community banks, we know each other within our community, we can say, no, Brown and Reg are a bit poor, they don't have anything, please assist them. And those community banks will go all the way to assisting, and therefore the growth and development of the citizens.
Yeah, and that goes back again to the core of banking, which was community. I remember chatting with Carpagri and their lending, which is community driven, and their impairment rate is 0.07%, which any bank in the country would absolutely love. Richard Corsi, Executive Director, First Source Money. Appreciate the time and the thoughts. That's it for today. A poll, chatting with Dr. Chris Homser there from CH Economics. What is your expectation for to get back to pre-pandemic levels for our economy? Do you think it took longer than expected? What was it? 9 quarters or about right? I think it was about right. I mean, I expected sort of somewhere in the first half of this year. I'd hoped for last year, but that perhaps was a little bit hopeful. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. And our poll yesterday with Evan Walker talking about the local consumer, and he said, I'm worried that consumers are cracking. He said, we've not seen that evidence yet. Watch the margins on the retailers. We asked you what your sense was. Almost two-thirds of you said it's really bad. A quarter said tough, okay. And the remaining, about a tenth of you said, look, frankly, your budget is already starting to crack. And that is the hard evidence on the ground. It is tough out there. Have your vote, have your say, Twitter and LinkedIn. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nabokle, Nicole Tetzo, to you for listening, my guests for the early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.